Hello and welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast. For each episode, we'll champion and discuss a pioneering woman in film who we think should be on your radar. I'm Beth Webb, and I'm here today with my Bechdel Test Fest partners in crime. Now, for our new listeners, I want to give just a little overview of who we are and what we do. So, the Bechdel Test Fest is an ongoing celebration of women in cinema, and we're made up of a group of programmers and film critics who I'm joined with here today. So, I'll start by introducing Karina. Hi, Karina Antrobus.
Hello, Beth Webb.
And hello to Stephanie Watts.
Hi, Beth Webb. Stephanie, that was very formal. Normally it's just Steph.
I don't know what's coming over me. And hi to you, Caitlin Quinlan.
Hello, Beth Webb.
Now we've got a very, very exciting episode for you today. Our subject is Shannon Murphy. Shannon is a film and TV director who makes her feature debut with Baby Teeth. The film is a delicate, occasionally devastating film about a precocious teenager called Miller, who's played by Eliza Scanlon. If you saw the latest version of Little Women, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, you'll know that she is Beth in the film. Miller is terminally ill when she meets the fiery and feral drug dealer Moses, who's played by newcomer Toby Wallace. Seeing the joy that Moses brings Miller, parents Anna and Henry, played by Essie Davis and Ben Mendelsohn, reluctantly let him into their lives. We're going to play a quick clip from the film and then ask the big question, who is she?
I wanted to ask you something. Will you come to my school formal?
I'm a bit old for it.
No.
Do I have to wear a suit?
I don't think so.
I'd like to wear one.
Oh my God! My heart's beating so fast, I was like having a heart attack.
So that was a quick clip from Baby Teeth. And I'll now direct our big question of the episode to Karina. So Karina, Shannon Murphy, who is she?
Shannon, she's exciting. That's who she is. That's how I felt when I was watching her work and I got the opportunity to delve into a little of her past times. She's very sprightly. She's very wise. She's quite young. She's an Australian filmmaker, but she started out in theatre and then cut her teeth into the world of TV. She's done a few shorts. She started off in 2013 with films such as Pineapple Squat, Love Me Tender, which is available on YouTube, and quite interesting when comparing it to her modern day work, The Comeback. But yeah, in her TV world, she's done quite a lot, including a four-part drama of about an Iraqi Australian boxer called On the Ropes, which I haven't seen, but I really now want to. She's done two episodes of Love Child, a show called Rake, and more recognisably, Killing Eve, which is really exciting. Yeah, so now she's here with her first debut for a feature film, and I think she's really promising in what she's delivered because it just shows so much promise, and what she's done has caught the eyes of so many film festivals all around the world. And yeah, so I really think that we'll be seeing a lot more of Shannon, so watch this space. But yeah, she's fantastic.
Lovely. So we had the very good fortune of catching up with Shannon ahead of the film's release. Steph spoke to her in Australia, so the call was a little bit distant, so bear with us, but she was really generous and wonderful with her time. Some great anecdotes about other female filmmakers. So do have a listen, and we will see you on the other side.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about Baby Teeth. So it's almost a year since it premiered at Venice Film Festival and you were doing the whole kind of festival circuit. How was that experience of seeing it play around the world?
Oh, look, you know, Venice was incredibly special because we had never had the film
film had an audience before then. So for the first time to be in that amazing, beautiful space, you know, with an 8-minute standing ovation and everybody laughing and crying, and it was a life-changing moment, really. And then to see it go on to so many other countries and hear in each different place how people breathe differently and laugh differently as they watched it was incredible. You know, prior to this, I'd only ever directed television, and you don't get to have that communal experience with your audience as you're watching the work. I mean, you do in theatre, which is where I began my career. So it felt like a return to that collective experience, which was really nice.
Did you find that was kind of the main difference in working on a feature film instead of TV or theatre, or were there a lot of other differences?
I definitely think as a director, working with actors and writers is quite similar across the three, but technically it's a very different medium and the craft is really different, and I find it's quite strange if people just talk about sort of jumping from one into the other without... I went back to film school because I felt really strongly that I needed to learn the new cinematic language. And I really enjoyed doing that, and I wanted to be that kind of director on set who could talk to the cinematographer more technically not be out of the loop on some of those conversations. So I really enjoyed gaining that new skill set. Television definitely, I mean, I think is a great training ground for feature films. Not as big a difference, you know, heads of department, cast are working across both. The budgets are starting to get really similar. The time frames are starting to get quite similar. I'd say the post-production side of things is really different. In cinema, you have so much more time, and I think that makes a really big difference. But otherwise, you know, I think they're sort of becoming closer, you know, to each other in many ways, TV and film.
And the screenplay for the film was adapted from a stage play at first. Did you have a lot of input in how that would translate into film?
Look, I actually didn't see the original play, and I wasn't part of the development at all. I came on board when the screenplay was ready to go, but I knew of Rita Carnier, the writer. She was also a wonderful theatre actress, and I used to really admire her performance work. But she found... she always thought the play was quite inherently specific, and also because she has worked across both mediums, she really knew the difference between what was theatrical writing and what was cinematic writing, and I think did an amazing job doing the adaptation. So structurally it's quite different to the play. It starts with the second last scene of the film, but you know, I still wanted to honour some of the theatrical elements, like the titles which she had in the original play, I love characters that feel larger than life but they are extraordinarily grounded at the same time. And so I think that side of it from the theatre origin is clear in the work.
It's really impressive as well, because it's so kind of emotional and sad at points, but it's also really funny.
Yeah, and you know, tonally that's what's so exciting about it. And I think Rita and I really share similar views on the world and sense of humour, and I just think it was like this perfect creative marriage between the two of us, because we just really got each other. And I think what you know, love about that duality in the film is so much of, you know, the genius that is Rita's writing.
And you had relative newcomer Eliza Scanlon as Miller. What was it like to be working with her as the kind of fairly new actor?
Oh, it's very exciting, particularly because Eliza had not done a leading role in Australia. This is her first Australian feature film, and, you know, she was just so ready for it. And she's an amazing chameleon and such an extraordinary actress and so wise beyond her years. And that was so perfect for the heart of who Miller was. And, you know, she's parenting her own parents, and sometimes Eliza does feel like the smartest person on set, and I love that about her. And so I felt really fortunate to get to be the director of her first Australian feature.
And I guess you also have that mix with more experienced actors like Essie Davis and Ben Mendelsohn. Was that kind of helpful to have on set at the time?
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, they're both, you know, Australian legends and have had the most extraordinary careers. And two of them had always wanted to work together, but they haven't before. So that was really exciting for them. And, you know, Ben was getting to come back from America where he'd been for almost 10 years and got to come back to do a feature, which he hadn't done since Animal Kingdom. And, you know, in America, he's known for his really brooding sort of dark horse characters. But in Australia, you know, we know that his body of work has had an extraordinary amount of comedy in it. And he's a really sensitive soul and is a beautiful father himself. So it was really wonderful to have him play Henry. And Essie is someone I just fell in love with when I saw her years ago in Steven Soderbergh came out to Sydney to direct a play called Top Mum at the Sydney Theatre Company. And Essie was in that, and he put her on a massive screen in the theatre and didn't even let her take a bow at curtain call. So people thought she was actually pre-recorded, but she wasn't. She was live every night backstage, basically doing this whole massive monologue. And I just was like, who is that extraordinary woman? Because I didn't grow up in Australia, so I didn't know all of her work before that. And people were like, that's Essie Davis. Like, she's won a million awards. And I was like, oh, my God, she's incredible. So it was really, you know, I've been following her ever since then and just was so excited to work with her because I knew that she would offer something to Anna that many people couldn't. She was so not judgmental and played the, you know, duality of this divided heart of being both, you know, a pianist sort of diva and wanting to be this incredibly supportive mother and just the conflict that she had inside of her while trying to do both of those things. Yeah, and she's very funny. So it was basically everyone was very funny. And we did have a lot of laughs on set despite the fact that it was in the middle of Sydney summer, which is just disgusting. And everyone was sweating like pigs all day long.
Yeah, I think she walks that line so well, I think, with the kind of contradictions in her character. There's a moment where she's just like, I'm sorry, I'm just really high right now, or something that I just like burst out laughing at when we were watching it.
And the thing about that scene is it's actually twice as long. There was like a whole front section to that scene that was also so brilliant. But because that was a bit theatrical in the sense that, you know, in a play you can sit down and have a scene that long. And we always knew that it might be too long for the film, but we just loved it so much we didn't want to cut any of the words. And then because of the balance of it with the rest of the scenes, we had to trim it. But honestly, in its entirety, I still think that scene is just so remarkable. The whole thing together is just brilliant. And she's so funny in it.
I feel like, kind of, yeah, still talking about the adaptation from stage to screen, the layout of that house really lends itself so perfectly to just adding kind of movement, and where you have the square garden in the middle and like you have these moments where people are walking around a lot. I feel like that really lends itself really well to that.
Yeah, that house is amazing. There's this beautiful mid-century house in St. Ives that had never been renovated, and our producer Alex White found it. And when we came in there, we just went, this perfect, look at that aspect. Like, you get to look straight through it, through the glass in the courtyard, all the way out to that swimming pool out the back. And, you know, that it felt like this beautiful glass atrium that Miller was trapped in and wanted to escape, but at the same time it's still so warm and still had so much beautiful family life in it. But I did love that you could see everyone the whole way around, unless you kind of escaped into one of your bedrooms, everybody could see everything that you were doing the whole time. So, yeah, it was amazing. And also, you know, a lot of glass everywhere, which our cinematographer, you know, just lapped up and worked with incredibly well. And we just, yeah, we spent a lot of time in there. We got to pre-block the whole film in there with other actors, and the owners were really generous with their time. And yeah, we all sort of felt like we lived in that house actually for all those months. It was a really alive and essential character to the film.
I just have a couple of questions that we're kind of asking on all our interviews going forward. Is there a woman in film working at the moment who really excites you? You kind of always want to see their work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots. I really, Lucretia Martel, who was on the Venice panel last year, I think her work's amazing. And then of course, is Andrea Arnold and Jane Campion. But also my contemporaries, I really love an Australian director called Kitty Green, who I think is making really exciting work, and Maddie Diop, who this year was in Palm Springs with me. I think she's a really interesting filmmaker. Yeah, I think there are many that I'm constantly inspired by, yeah.
And what is a female-focused film that you would recommend to listeners?
I guess a performance by a woman. I mean, I love A Woman Under the Influence. I love Breaking the Waves. I guess in terms of one directed by a woman, I think American Honey is an amazing film by Andrea Arnold. I think Sweetie by Jane Campion's fantastic. I really love, there's an Australian director, Shirley Barrett, who did Love Serenade. I think that's such a unique Australian film. It was made in 1996, and it's just got such an unusual, brilliant, bonkers sense of humour. And I don't think a lot of people know about that film, but I just think it's really extraordinary.
Okay, so that was our interview with Shannon. Now it's our time in the podcast to talk a little bit about the film. As I say, we're four critics as well as programmers, so we really enjoy getting into the meat of a film and dissecting it, especially when it's a female-focused film. I'm going to start by asking you, Steph. Now, this is quite a visceral film. It deals with a lot of subjects like terminal illness, precocious teenagers, first love. How did you feel coming away from watching a film like this?
I had to kind of stand off to the side a little bit after I came out of the cinema to really kind of just take it all in and calm down a little bit, I think. I saw this at London Film Festival and I didn't really know what to expect, because I quite like to just kind of go into films in a festival setting just from a kind of couple of lines of what it's about and stuff. And I really was not expecting it to be so kind of tragic and sad and dealing with all of this stuff, was really trying to work out how I felt about all of it, because I feel like it has so many contradictions. You know, it has this girl in love with an older boy who's maybe not quite right for her, it has her parents that have their own kind of problems and hypocrisies that are kind of letting her go along with this romance because she's ill, and also questioning whether that's a good idea. And I think it's really a film that doesn't try to tell you what's right and wrong. It's very much about kind of people going through these really hard situations and not knowing themselves if it's right or wrong. So I think, yeah, when it finished, I was a bit like, oh, I need to work out what I actually thought of that and how I felt about all of these kind of subjects that it was bringing up. But yeah, a lot going on in such a short film.
It's very, very complex. Karina, what did you think that this film says about family?
Oh, so much. I mean, this is essentially a family drama as well as a coming of age romance as well. There's a lot going on in terms of genre. And as much as the premise is presented as something that's quite sad, actually there's a lot of humour in it. And it's actually quite, it's more ha-ha than boo-hoo if you actually unpick it. But in terms of the family, I think what I loved is the introduction to the dynamics of the mother and the father, in that they are very well-to-do, they've lived an interesting life, but they're by no means too prim. They're still a little bit saucy. They're still sexually active. They're still trying to find their own ways of what's appropriate and what isn't. They themselves are on their own mission to try and alleviate some of the pain that's going on within their family by any means necessary, and that's by exploring their own addictions. Everybody in this film is addicted to something, whether that is just escapism in itself or something a little bit more medical. And I think the whole book, if there is one, on parenting completely has to go out the window when you are faced with something pendingly tragic. And I thought that was a really interesting exploration into that. Like, how can you tell your daughter what's right or wrong when part of growing up is finding out those mistakes for yourself, but then that changes when you aren't actually sure if your daughter's going to make it past a certain age. And, you know, there's no spoilers here, but that's what they are looking at, and that's what isn't actually explicitly said, but that's what we get. And I think that's also what I quite like about it, the ambiguity of, like, you don't actually know what she's got, but it's not important. What's important is this moment in time with this family as they all come of age in their own different ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. Caitlin, I wanted to talk to you about the aesthetic of the film. It's obviously mostly set in this big, beautiful house that really makes wonderful use of light and location. I wanted to know your thoughts on that. And also, something that stood out to me is that the film is sort of segregated into chapters. So you get a small precursor and a title for each part. And I wanted to know your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I really love the chapters. Even the aesthetic of the title cards coming up is really well done. There's something really kind of playful, and a lot of the humour of the film does come through in those titles, which is really wonderful. I think the house, what was really interesting for me in the interview with Shannon is when she kind of talks about the house as this site of, you know, warmth, but it's also very much kind of made of glass, and there's a lot of, you know, you can see through, the house is stunning, by the way, like, it's completely beautiful, and you can see all the way through the house, and it kind of, you know, has this representation of Miller as someone who's kind of trapped in that environment, but also granted such love and warmth from the people around her. And as we've said, you know, this is such a layered narrative, and the kind of stories that it intertwines from this family are so rich and complex. And that's really, you know, I think that's really embedded in the house in that very aspect. And I think something, you know, elsewhere in the film, the aesthetics, these kind of coming of age styles that I think seem to have been adopted quite recently, something that I have a bit of a bugbear about, neon lights being kind of a synonym for youthful rebellion and these coming of age narratives, it kind of irritates me, because I think it's kind of been overdone by this point. But there's something about the scene in Baby Teeth where Shannon Murphy kind of, you know, uses those, that feels much more nuanced and much more interesting as Miller kind of enters this space that's quite sort of artistic and otherworldly. It just seems to have a depth to it that I think some other coming of age narratives who've used similar techniques maybe hasn't. And there's one image that I just love where she's eating an ice lolly and then applies lipstick and goes back to eating the ice lolly. And I just think this clashing of kind of worlds between childhood and growing up and taking these steps to sort of become a woman, there's, yeah, so much of her coming of age narrative is sort of carried out in that clash, which I really, really like.
I like how Miller isn't especially likable in certain scenarios. I think it's great that even though she is terminally ill, she's still a teenager and trying to people. And interesting that you mentioned about addiction earlier, Karina, you do get this idea of being absolutely obsessed with love, you know, the first time that you experience it, the first time you experience being out of control of something and how you become so immersed in that. There's a very poignant scene where Moses really pushes Miller and her family to the edge and does some unspeakable things, and she's still trying to hold on to him and trying to kind of hold on to what he makes her feel, which is really interesting, I think. We touched on this briefly, Karina, I don't know if you had any more thoughts on this, but it's a sloppy term, but I think some people will label this as a tragicomedy, which we're seeing a lot of at the moment. I was wondering if you had any more thoughts on how successful this film was in drawing lightness out of dark subject matter.
Well, from looking at Shannon's work and what she said about how the actual process of making this, I just thought it was really interesting, because she said that she did different takes per scene in different, so she did numerous takes per scene and asked the actors to really either lean in or draw back in their performances, and then the work on what she decided on how to deliver it came in the edit. So she was able to have two different versions of most scenes where she thought, okay, well, does this need to be sad or does this need to be light? Does this need to be dark or light or sad or happy? And I thought that was a really interesting way of making sure that she got the right tone throughout. And really quite genius and great that she had the amount of time to do all of that. But it also meant that she could let her work evolve into what it needed to be. And I think there are so many different elements that help her deliver the right tone. And because I don't, as much as there are things that are very sad about it, it is very light and it's not even that. Yeah, there's a lot of light in it, and even in the aesthetic. So she plays with colour a lot, and going back to the neon and looking at the colour of her wigs and the sunlight coming in, it really uplifts what is otherwise a really quite sad story. And I think what Steph was saying about the contradictions, that's also helping the mood be lifted and elevated from one shade to the next. And there's a lot of playing with the mood, and I can't really explain it, but I just think she's done it very, very well. And also the characters, I mean, this goes back to her theatrical experience of playing with characters that are larger than life and who are able to really pull out the emotions of what is going on in a really theatrical way. And all the cast are just so fantastically placed, I think, to do that. And I think in a lesser cast, it wouldn't have been able to have the nice mix of tragedy and comedy.
I think it also just has that thing that you find in real life situations as well, where you just have kind of weird coincidences or weird moments of humour in a time or in a moment that isn't supposed to be funny. So like the kind of heavily pregnant neighbour whose dog is called Henry, and Ben Mendelsohn's character is also called Henry, like, and her like always calling out Henry and stuff like that is just like, it's so good. And just has like these really kind of dark jokes that I think I just wouldn't expect from a film with a topic like that. But I guess when your main character is kind of so close to death and like thinking about that, then that does make space for kind of crueler jokes a little bit. Like, I'm just thinking of the kind of, yeah, with that neighbor, I think she's like smoking and eating an ice lolly, and Ben Mendelsohn's character is like, you shouldn't really smoke if you're pregnant. She's like, oh yeah, I need two hands really, or like, I need both hands free or something like that. It's like, yeah, just like stuff where you're like, oh, should I be laughing at this? Like, but yeah, I just think it balances that so well.
Steph, you spoke about this with Shannon a little bit in the interview, but I wanted to ask how effective Shannon was in nurturing these new performers. So we've got Toby Wallace, Eliza, as we say, was in Little Women, Sharp Objects, I think it was, she was in as well. So she's got some background, but this is the first time we've really seen her in a lead role. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, because I think Shannon had said kind of it was really exciting to work with Eliza Scanlon, and she like just seems so talented. Like, I'm so excited to see more of her. And even in Little Women, she has such a small role, and that kind of role of Beth is normally quite kind of backgroundy and can fade away a little bit, and she just manages to bring so much to that small role. And yeah, in this she's just like a bit of a kind of firecracker. Like, you're always wanting to watch her, even though you've got like Essie Davis and Ben Mendelsohn in there with her, and she just like interacts so well. I think that relationship between her and her mum, so like Essie Davis and Eliza Scanlon, whenever they're on screen together, you just believe it. Like, you can believe that relationship, and I think that feels like such kind of, obviously, the talent of Shannon Murphy, like bringing out those performances, and the talent of those actors. And yeah, I guess having like slightly more experienced actors on set probably helps with that, like breaking that in. But yeah, I can't wait to see whatever she does next. Maybe I'll go and watch Sharp Objects because I've never seen that. So
Sharp Objects is really good. She, I think she's amazing in Sharp Objects. And something that I noticed in Baby Teeth is she kind of has this wildness to her that very much was in Sharp Objects as well, which, as you say, didn't necessarily get to come out in Little Women as much. But yeah, it really lends itself to the comedy as well. There's one scene I love where she's at a violin lesson, and she starts making these bird noises. And when she's kind of reprimanded for it, she makes an equally kind of sad bird noise. And it just is so, the timing of it is just perfect, and it works so well. Yeah, I think she's great in this.
Coming back to the ties between daughter and mother, Caitlin, I appreciate we touched on this earlier because I forgot this question was at the end. But I wanted to ask for your thoughts on, I guess we can break it down a little bit about your thoughts on the central relationships between the four key characters.
Yeah, I think what works so well in this film, you know, we've been saying it's a very complex and layered narrative, but every character kind of has their own focus, and it's Miller's story, you know, she kind of orbits the lives of these other people, and her story is very central to what goes on with the rest of them, but they still have a narrative of their own, even if it's, you know, as we've said, Ben Mendelsohn attending to the pregnant neighbor, or Essie Davis, you know, slightly overdoing it on her medication. They all kind of have this focus on their own story, and I think that really helps when tying it all together, in that you don't just then get this sense of tragedy and you know, a really sad story about Miller's life and the kind of loss of youth there. You do get a more rounded sense of a family that's gonna continue kind of with or without her in lots of ways, and how they kind of can come together with a community around them, even though it's, you know, slightly less conventional than some others, and, you know, it kind of draws in people from all walks of life. I think that really helps to, yeah, bring this sense of family and community out of the story.
And so that concludes another episode of Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast, and you can now catch Baby Teeth in cinemas across the UK. Please do seek us out on all your social media channels and join us for a new episode of Who Is She? In a few weeks' time. Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was written and hosted by me, Beth Webb, produced by Stephanie Woods, with additional help from Caitlin Quinnan and Karina Antropos. Our music was written and produced by Zoe Mead. Baby Teeth clips were courtesy of Picture House Entertainment.